We're going to enter the world of modern technology and obstetrics and gynecology.
Okay, good morning, everybody. And it's always an honor and a pleasure to be at this wonderful conference. This is the third one of the shiurim and the other speakers, and you have to put up with mine as well. So we entitled today's talk, Three Parents in a Plastic Bag, which eventually will be a quick overview of some of the halachic shilas that are available in the OBGYN realm, to talk and focus about a specific new shiloh with a very interesting potential theoretical application that I certainly would not have thought of on my own. And in discussions with Chef de Schlita, some of the ideas that he expressed, I'll bring to your attention. So the most important thing over here is there a pointer on this? Thank you. Ma rabu masecho Hashem. That's the essence of this talk. The unbelievable complexity of human birth is just an amazing thing. And for people to not appreciate that, I've heard many scientists express the idea, if you're not a believer in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, study science. Because the complexity of this is an impossible thing to accomplish through random chance. People have given statistical analyses of the likelihood of Shakespeare being typed out by a monkey, if you put monkey in front of a typewriter and just randomly pecked at it. So the likelihood of producing all the works of Shakespeare is about 50 digits. The complexity of the human system is much more than that. So for somebody to argue that it randomly occurs, just statistically, very, very unlikely. Ma rabu masecho Hashem. So everybody likes a little controversy. So when does life begin? At the petri dish versus cloning for research? And even the embryos are divided. Oh, bad pun, sorry. I thought it was funny. So this is a very, very fundamental shaila. I remember one of the first shiurim I ever gave on medical ethics was a whole discussion of Rav Moshe's position on artificial insemination, whether it's preferable to use a donor who is Jewish versus a donor who's not Jewish. We have halachic shilas in pregnancy, going back to the time of the Gemara, obviously, but as the technology advances and as we learn more and more about this important problem and how to solve this problem for a couple that can't have a child, it's a very, very depressing experience for them. And women who have gone through this, more so than their husbands, have spoken about this, how difficult it is for them. And technology today has dramatically changed the ability of many couples who previously only choice for having a child was adoption, for now them to have their own biological child. And these shilas are very, very important. We've already long gone from the point of view, are you sure this baby is mine? Well, how do you define mine? She certainly doesn't have to be the genetic mother. We've already had surrogate motherhood. If you look at the Targum of Yonas and Uziel, you have the whole famous discussion with Rachel and Leah, with the switch according to the Targum Yonas with Uziel, the switch of the embryos from Rachel to Leah, and Leah to Rachel, with Yosef and Dina. So we're not sure always, is this baby mine? In the sense, was this baby produced in the classical sense, where the mother is both the genetic mother as well as the birth mother? With surrogate motherhood, we certainly have the ability to change that. And I couldn't resist this slide. Our president, Donald Trump, is our president at the Kotel. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for building this wall that keeps the Mexicans out of Israel. So there's always controversy. There's always interesting ideas that are brought forward. And in the realm of medicine, these controversies aren't just good conversations over a cup of coffee at the local lunch shop, but these have huge halachic ramifications. So it's already old news. We've discussed this many times here at this conference, the birth of a baby with three parents' DNA. Rabbi Nachman so beautifully discussed this a little bit last night. I only had one slide on it. I'm not going to go into it in great detail. But we, of course, all know about in vitro fertilization. There's nobody here that doesn't know somebody who has a baby that was produced with in vitro fertilization. And this has huge halachic shilas in terms of can you do a bris on Shabbos of a baby born through in vitro fertilization? We discussed that in the past. Has huge shilas as to when you should do this. Rabbi Steinberg has spoken about this at previous conferences as well. I won't go into those details, but this is now a real new technology in terms of having three parents' DNA, not including a surrogate mother. When it really wasn't DNA, that was three parents. Now we have three parents' DNA. And this is a real case that just occurred half a year ago. A child born with three parents' DNA. They injected mitochondrial material, which is basically cytoplasmic DNA, in the mitochondria. And this was an unrecognized component. We always said, oh, 23 chromosomes for mommy, 23 for daddy. The standard teaching is each parent gives 50% of the chromosomes, yet the Gemara talks about certain genetic diseases that are only transmitted from the mother. We can understand genetic disease is only transmitted from the father. We understand that for a long time. The Gemara discusses hemophilia. But that Gemara was always one of those Gemaras that, well, just disagrees with what we know, and the rabbis must have been wrong. Well, it turns out the rabbis are right, and the scientists are wrong until relatively recently, when we realized that there is a certain muscular diseases that can be transmitted solely through maternal DNA. Rabbi Rachman spoke about this last night, but I think Rabbi Steinberg is going to speak further about this in terms of the potential for using this to determine if somebody is a Kohen, somebody is a Jewish person, using DNA analysis. And we've spoken about that in previous conferences as well. And in this situation, a real life case, which is illegal in the United States, it's a banned technique in the United States. This was done with US physicians in Mexico. I guess they got through the COTEL to get to Mexico. And they took the mother's nuclear DNA, cytoplasmic DNA found in the mitochondria, and they placed it in the egg of a healthy egg donor after removing the healthy donor's nuclear DNA. So this way you have a hybrid, if you wish. The genetic material is a mixture from the chromosomal DNA and the mitochondrial DNA. And this study was published in September. The baby's now about a year old, a little bit less. At 5 months, they had healthy, normal mitochondria in this baby. And you basically have three genetic parents, no longer two genetic parents and a carrier. But you now have three genetic parents. And again, Lanias Dati, as Rabbi Steinberg also pointed out, this enormously controversial from a secular ethics point of view is 100% halachically mutter. You're not doing any isurim, so any post-ex say is a theoretical or practical halachic problem, not talking hashkafic, not talking about doing this, as Rabbi Steinberg mentioned, in order to have a 6'4", 250-pound linebacker, but in order to have a healthy baby. Otherwise, this baby would have been born with a very serious, life-threatening, mitochondrial DNA muscular disorder. And they, in fact, had two children. This couple had two previous children that were very, very sick, and I believe both of them died. So this was a life-saving procedure to allow them to have a healthy child. And halacha certainly permits in vitro fertilization, PGD, all sorts of other newer technologies that clearly have a benefit. Clear cut, they're going to die if you don't do this technique. You'll have a very, very debilitated, severely ill patient if you don't do this. So, unimportant reasons to have blue eyes, not a good reason to do this because there are dangers involved. Forget the hashkafic aspects. But for life-threatening, life-saving procedures, this is certainly very, very good. And again, Rabbi Steinberg, actually, to have discussed this many times, and this will be another chance to say thank you to Jay and Laser for the wonderful work they do in putting this conference together. So now let's talk about something that's not so old. Real Shiloh is having four parents. Who is the halachic mother in these situations? Who do you send that Mother's Day card to? Is it a nuclear donor? A mitochondrial donor? What if you have a surrogate mother? You don't have to carry it with either one of these two. So you could have three mothers of some sort and a father. Some suggest the father is the only real legitimate parent. This has halachal nicer ramifications. If we had a Beis Din, if we had Sanhedrin, do you give skila for cursing a parent if they're not halachically 100% the parent? give cursing a parent, chavalah on a parent, the whole mitzvah of kibud av va'em. There are many, many halachal mitzvah ramifications, not just the theoretical who do you send the Mother's Day card or Father's Day card to, and it's not clear. It's very controversial. I'm involved somewhat with a case right now that I've asked Rav Shechter Shmita to posit on in terms of a very complicated case with a non-frum family who is undergoing this type of a procedure. The donor in this situation is a non-Jewish donor. The child will be placed inside this non-frum woman, and what will be the halachic status of that child when they're born? So normally we do a gir l'chumra, but this is a non-frum child. So most Orthodox Batei Din will not do a gir on a non-frum child, because the whole basis or understanding of doing such a gir is because it's beneficial to the child to have this gir. They'll be raised in an Orthodox family, so then mastama, it's a benefit, it's a schus for the child, and zochel yodim shelo b'fanav, and we have the right to benefit somebody. If any of you find a lottery ticket out there that allows me to win $1 million, I give you perfectly good permission to go pick it up on my behalf. That's called zochel yodim shelo b'fanav. But you can't be chavin liyodim shelo b'fanav. You can't go and cause a detriment to somebody, cause something that would be deleterious to them, and say, well, I'm doing it on your behalf. I have the right to say, I didn't ask you to be a shaliach to me. I didn't make you a messenger to do something that will hurt me. So there is the halachic approach, which we postulate, that we normally do not do a gyur for a child, because this child is going to grow up in a non-shomer Torah mitzvah environment and will be a firm person from a halachic point of view, will be a Jewish person from a halachic point of view, but not benefit to them. They'd be much better off being a ben Noach and having the Zayin mitzvahs ben Noach and being an Eulich non-Jewish person and earn their own haba, as opposed to they go up to Shemayim. They're going to be a whole list of things that they did wrong, albeit maybe as a tinok shenishba, but that's not a tzchus for the child. So what do you do in such a situation? These are ma'isim b'chol yom. I don't think most people even know to ask such a shayla, because most people don't necessarily tell their rabbi that this child was a product of surrogate motherhood, or was a product of in vitro fertilization. And these are shaylas that could come up in terms of, do you need a gir l'chumra, and what would be the status? So these are huge shaylas. These are somewhat old shaylas. These aren't specifically new shaylas. So Torah in Motion always wants cutting edge. Lays is not happy if we talk about something that doesn't have Tavshin Ayin Zayin. He would like us to talk about Tavshin Ayin Ches. So what's new and exciting? So there's a famous Gemara Nida, which unfortunately doesn't show up as well as it does when I look at my computer. And I'll just read you, I did translate it because I saw it didn't show up so well. But basically, there's a famous Gemara Nida, it's found in other places as well, Gimel Shutim Ba'adam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world as a partnership between him and us in terms of procreation. And we basically have the father contributing certain things. This is more on a hashkafic labdavka, a pure genetic basis. That the father contributes what the Gemara calls the white substances, the lavan, which includes these things over here. And again, this is more of an allegorical type of an approach rather than a DNA type of an approach. The mother supplies the edom, the red substances, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts in the ruach, the neshama, and various other things as well, basically what we would call bina. And then when it's 120 years are up and the person leaves this world, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes back his part, and the body is the body, and that's what the parents contributed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the body a body. So this famous Gemara Nida now has to be analyzed in relation to the plastic bag. So this is even newer technology than the mitochondrial DNA transplant, which occurred in Mexico in September. And this is a paper that was published in Nature Communications, and I'll show you the paper in a second. And just to know a little bit about the background medically, a human baby at about 23 weeks of gestation is about the lower limit for survivability. It used to be 26 weeks, then 25 weeks, then 24 weeks. Now we're getting down to the area where a baby can survive 23, 24, 25, not with the greatest expectation, certainly not 100% life expectation, and not necessarily without having any medical problems that would be possibly lifelong, but there is a viability. Remember, very, very impressive moment in my medical career when I was at the birth of a 21-week fetus, and everybody I stayed there with the baby as the baby died, because there was nothing the technology could do. They don't put the baby in an incubator, they don't put the baby on any machines. The baby is a vaday going to die. The technology will not allow a 21-week baby to survive, but the baby was alive and breathing, and I held the baby. It was a very, created a very roshim on me about the sanctity of life. Well, that 23-week baby that in this study, a human baby born in 23 weeks, would be the equivalent of a lamb born prematurely at 107 days of its gestation. So that's roughly equivalent. And they took this lamb out of its mother's womb, mommy lamb's womb, and they put it in a plastic bag. They put it in a system, which I'll describe to you, and the baby matured as if it was still within the mother. And this is the baby in 28 days of support. You can see the growth in size, changes in number of parameters. And this article was published online 2 months ago. I hope that's current enough, you laser. 2 months ago, April 25th, in Nature Communications. And basically, a fetal lamb at that age is equivalent to an extremely premature human of about 23 weeks. And they put together this, now I read the article several times because it's just so interesting. This extrauterine system physiologically was able to support this premature lamb. And they did this for 4 weeks at the time the article was published. I don't have, unfortunately, additional knowledge what happened since then. It's already 2 months later. I don't know what's happened to this lamb. They maintained the patency of the fetal circulation. When we take a baby out, we put it in an incubator, and we put in all sorts of umbilical arteries and catheterizations, we've changed around. The baby is breathing through its lungs. It's not breathing through its umbilical artery. So there's a huge difference between birth and neonatal ICU care versus this system. This system is essentially an artificial womb. You maintain the fetal circulation. I won't go into that, but all the physicians here will understand that that's a totally different circulation than the baby-born circulation. They showed normal body growth as if it was inside the mother's womb, normal brain growth, which is a critical factor, normal lung maturation and myelination. And this is the schematic of that. What they basically did is they hooked up to the machine the fetal circulation. So you're continuing the umbilical circulation. We use an umbilical artery or an umbilical catheterization just as a central line in children, but the circulation has changed. All the normal changes physiologically occur at birth occur when a child is born. We don't do anything to try to retain that. This study retained that fetal circulation. And here you see the actual diagrams, which I showed you before. For those that like a little bit to see the actual mechanism of how it's doing this, you're basically putting the baby on a system whereby
your visual placenta.
You mimic what's going on. This is a closed, sterile fluid environment using the umbilical access, and you've created an artificial womb. This plastic bag can be viewed halachically, possibly or not, as the baby still being in the womb, or the baby being in another womb other than its mother's womb. And now that's something certainly the Gemara could never have talked about, to have a transfer from one womb to another womb, right? So how does halacha deal with something like this? Well, I'll tell you, hafochba v'hafochba v'kulobba. And there is a Gemara in Ksubis over here, which again, I can read, I don't know if you can read it, I won't read you a lot of it. Tosa says over here a very, very important idea. There are many things that the Gemara talks about that are, lo shchiach basically means near impossible, possibly impossible. Yet the Gemara talks about that. I mentioned last night the concept of ben sora mora. According to many, never such a thing existed. Ir hanidachas. We have a whole bunch of other situations in the Gemara where it talks about, could such a thing have ever really existed? A sota, did a real sota ever really exist? So you have these questions, and sometimes where it says, l'hadil Torah l'adira. Torah just wants us to learn. Torah wants us to spend our lives immersed in learning Torah. Sometimes halacha l'maisa, sometimes not halacha l'maisa. And sometimes it gives us text to illustrate certain ideas or concepts, ethics, halachos that the Gemara wants to give us. So Tosa says over here, Ma'iri ben ha'shas lidrosh u'lekabel schar. Lidrosh ulekabel schar. That's the purpose of a Gemara sometimes. Based upon this Gemara, there's another Gemara in Chulin Behema Maksha. Boy Rabbi, Rabbi asked the Shaila, Karcho Besid Mahu. If you were to put some sort of a lining around the womb, and the child came out, so what would be the halacha? Is that a pet derechem? Is that not a pet derechem? Interesting separate shaila. But that then goes off into an unbelievable Gemara. If you didn't have this plastic bag Gemara, if you didn't have the plastic bag idea, this Gemara would say, ah, it's one of those Gemaras we just don't understand. Gemara says, Hidbik Shnei Rachamim, V'yotzomi zeh, V'nichnas lezeh. You take a baby out of one womb, and you put the baby into another womb. V'nichnas lezeh lezeh. Mahu. How do we view this? Is this the first one, the Paterechem, and not the second one? Or is the second one also Paterechem, the one left off with Tegu? You don't come to a Kilush, Tegu. It's one of those Gemaras that we learned and learned and learned and learned and didn't understand it. How do you have one womb going to another womb? You're taking a baby out of a womb and inserting it into another womb. And we have unbelievable technology today. They do in utero surgery. You're actually doing surgery on the baby. They open up the uterus and they do surgery on the baby. The stomach, they actually take the baby out. I don't know if they actually leave the baby physically inside the womb. I don't know. Have they ever been inside the room with such surgery is being done? Then they close up the womb, they put the baby back inside before they close it up. And the baby goes on to, we have a child at our hospital right now. The mother has been sent to CHOP. CHOP is one of the major centers in the United States, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where we have such a baby right now who has born with some horrific surgically correctable abnormalities, and the baby will be delivered in our hospital in a few months. So this is going on right now in utero surgery. But that's not still taking it from one fetus and putting it into another, one womb putting it into another womb. This Gemara says we're not sure what the answer would be. So our case with the plastic bag is essentially that Gemara taking the baby from the mother's womb and putting it into another womb. So how does Halacha view this? So clearly from April till now, there's not going to be a lot of truths published. So I have to do a lot of searching to see what I can find that's similar to this. So you have Rav Zilberstein Shlita, Emeritus Yisrael, and he writes a number of svarim that deal with medical halacha issues. And he brings down from his father-in-law, Yashiv Zatzal, who was Shlita at this time. Unfortunately, it's Zatzal right now. And he says that the incubator, now this is not a womb. This is when you take a baby out, 25 weeks, you put it in the ICU, neonatal ICU, and you put it on an incubator. So he says, incubator, eino nechsheves lehem shecheroyim. Don't think for a second that being in an incubator is just a continuation of the pregnancy. Monim lo legabi pigeon aben, legabi gaglus, miyom ledoso lo. Say so, may an incubator. So you have a baby that's born at 6 months. It's in the ICU, neonatal ICU, until 8 months. So when's the birthday? When is the birthday? That's the question. So the day the baby is born. Royasha says the day that the baby is born. Not the day that the baby comes out of the incubator. So what we would say is the birthday is the actual birthday. Those 2 months that the baby spent in the neonatal ICU. So that's the baby being in the neonatal ICU. That's post-birth. That's what Rav Yashiv clearly possible. So you don't include the time of the incubator as part of the pregnancy. Does that answer our halachic dilemma over here? So based upon this chashuki chemet from Rav Zilberstein, one can argue incubator is different than a plastic womb. So when would you count the birthday? When do you count the pigeon of Ben? And a whole bunch of other unresolved questions regarding our plastic bag in terms of the bris. When would you do the bris? Assuming the baby was somehow healthy enough to have the bris. Pigeon of Ben, Bar Bas Mitzvah, when's a child of Gadol, a Gadola? So we can't answer this, I don't think, from the Chashuk Yechemet. So, is the baby alive? Is this baby a human being? So let's assume the baby is alive. At what point in time? So you have a tshuva here. Oops, I keep on pressing the wrong buttons, I apologize. So you have over here from the Chachan Tzvi, the Tzvi Ashkenazi, right? Golem from the late 1700s. Ma Gilo Shel Golem, famous Golem of Prague, which may or may not have ever existed, is certainly described in the Gemara. There are Amoraim in the Gemara that have created artificial life. So what is the status of this artificial life? Nechruku Aposkim, I am Golem, Odom Shin Notzar Ayde Sefer Yetzira. There is this concept of the Sefer Yetzira. So what is the status of this Sefer Yetzira creation in terms of it being a human being? First question they ask, Mitzar Flaminian. What would any good Jew do, make a golem for? You're in a place, there's nine guys, well, we gotta make a ten. So you can have somebody stand outside, say, at center, or you take out your Sefer Yetzira and you make the tenth guy for the minion. So what's the halachic status? Does that count? So he says, according to the opinion, she came with star of the minion. Nechelku ha'imu gogol miyad, or tzorot l'chakus yudimu shona. You have to wait till the golem is bar mitzvah, or is he bar mitzvah the moment you create him? So this is actually an interesting question. Warren Rosh Hashanah talks about this. Adam Arishon was not created as a little baby in diapers. He was created, the Gemara says, as a 20-year-old man. The whole world, this is the greatest answer to how we can have DNA evidence and carbon dating evidence that the world is only 5,777 years old. It seems to go against science. And the answer is no, it doesn't go against science at all. If you understand the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, heard this explanation, I think the name of Aaron Cutler, Satzal, but others say it as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a mature world. Adam Arishon was a 20-year-old man when he was created. The shar that was created then was a fully mature shar. If you took a sequoia tree and you opened it up and cut the rings around it, you wouldn't see that it was created a minute ago. It would have hundreds of rings around it. You saw the stars in the sky. It takes that light, hundreds of millions of light years sometimes to reach us. How could it have occurred? How can you see anything on the dead rings? Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world that's carbon dated to be 5 billion years old or whatever. It's a very simple answer. There's no shyness on this answer. It's an absolutely perfect answer. So this Adam that's created, is he bar mitzvah or is he a katan? That's the first question he asks. So the Chacham Tzvi has in this tshuva as well, he says, what happens if you kill this garland? Are you chayav misa? I want to point out there was a mistake on the schedule. I'm supposed to have till 11:20. Until 10:20, not 11:20. So just to point out, I'm not going over my time. I'm very conscious of my time for the next speaker. So this Adam Hanotz Ayidei Sefer Yetzira. Gemara in Sanhedrin. Rava Bara Gavra. Rava created such a person. And then they killed him. So what is the halachic status? So he brings down, there's a lot of stuff here in this tshuva, I don't have time to go through it in detail, but he brings down over here from the Sefer Apardes, for Ram Kardavoro. He says, this maimer of Rava creating the Sefer Yetzir over here, Hayetz Abriyahi Bitsuras Ha'odom, that key word there, Bitsuras Ha'odom, it has the shape and appearance of a human being. V'lo shiye bo neshama, v'lo nefesh, v'lo ruach, elechiyos bi'alma, it is alive, but it doesn't have the essentials. So how do we view this? So he says, it certainly doesn't do a lot of mitzvos, can't be mechuyev for mitzvos. And he concludes, afilu liman d'omer, tino shibarisa mitzaref. Even if you want to say there is an opinion that can be paskin done on very rare extenuating circumstances, that you have 9 men in the room and you have a baby, that you could possibly say dvarim shebikdusha. Again, Rav Moshe talks about this in his tshuvas in terms of Hul's tefillah, for a kavua minyan, a regular minyan, that for whatever the reason that day doesn't have a minyan, can you count a child to be the 10th person? So Rav Moshe says, yeah, under extenuating circumstances like that, you could actually count the child under the age of bar mitzvah to be part of that quote minyan. So he says, even if you want to say over here that a child can be, that's because the child will someday come, l'klal, dasi l'klal chiyuv. Lafuki hai, this is goyim. Lo asi l'klal chiyuv. Will never reach godless. He wants to suggest that you can't count such a creation as part of a minion. That's assuming it's alive. But listen to this. His son, the Yaivitz, Yaakov Emden, and see Ashkenaz, the Yaivitz, brings down over here this question of, do you count such a child to a minion? So he says, I'm not sure that the person is a person. Ein chiyuso, elu kechiyus ha-behema. He brings down sources, I won't read the whole tshuva. He brings down sources to suggest that this child created through a Sefer Yetzirah, this golem created through a Sefer HaYetzirah, is not a human being. And that has huge pshita, the eino elke behema b'tzuras adam, uke iglo tilsa, the mivre lo rechinina b'lazer. We have many times in the Gemara a discussion about the most delicious type of meat. There's something called an iglotils, a lot of different interpretations what this is, either a calf that's grown to one third of its maturity, a third born child to the mother, whatever this iglotils is. When they wanted to make a siyum, this is a suggestion for tonight's meal, we should create an iglotilsa, because that's the most succulent and delicious type of meat. So they created it. If you can't find a regular one, go create one. So he wants to suggest that this child, golem, plastic bag, is this considered a human being or not? So I asked this discussion with Rosh Hashanah Shlita, who certainly is one of the Gedolei Yisrael, and a person I go to, amongst others, when I have very difficult shilas to have answered. And I discussed this, and he said, and this is all theoretical, not halacha l'maisa. If the baby cannot survive without this technology, he questions if the baby is actually considered alive at that point and would be considered like an ubar still. Nafgamina would be, this child would have at that point in time a status as if it was from a Sefer Yetzirah and not be considered alive. Now we've talked in the past as well about what is the halachic status of an abortion. And surprisingly, there is no posek that really says that it's the same exact halachic status as if you, Rahman al-Islam, took a gun and killed a person who's born. So if you kill an ubar, there are different levels of potentially sure. There must be like 10 shitas as to what it is. One unbelievable tosos, if you read it with the gear, so it says it's not even usur to do an abortion. We certainly don't paska like that. But it's either an issur derabbanan or if it's an issur deraisa, it's not clear what level of issur deraisa. Everybody agrees it's not mises beisdin. There's no posek that I'm aware of. He said you get suspended for killing an ubar. So according to this analysis, he doesn't consider it necessarily a living human being at that point in time. And you theoretically, again, that key word there, theoretically could destroy this child without being a ritzicha. I'm sure that secular law would have a different opinion on that. Certainly, he says, you couldn't count such a child for a minyan or zima. Now, this is a whole big question. It's after the child is born now, do we still view it as a golem creation? And then even after the child is born, it would not be a human being. Now, we certainly have not gotten to the point where this is a halacha l'maisa human beings type of a situation. And here we're talking about that the initial gestation, up to 23 weeks, in the analogous case in the sheep, was in a mother. So I'm not sure if this can in any way be carried out to be exactly like the golem. But the technology is not that much further away from being able to take a dividing embryo and putting it into some sort of an artificial system in place. Or maybe only before 40 days it's inside the mother, and at 40 days it's taken out and put into this artificial womb, the second womb that the Gemara seems to be talking about. What would the halacha l'maisa status of such an animal, human being, be? Is it a behema? Is it like an iglotilsa? Is it like a golem that you can kill without any halachic ramifications? Or is this a living, breathing human being who you're talking to, who has das? So, Blazer, maybe you'll ask us to have the shiur on this again in a couple of years, because right now I think we have more problems than solutions in a halachic realm. I look forward to reading about the shamus and shulis that will come out from this and see what the Gedolim have to say as this becomes more of a halacha l'maisa situation in human beings. Because right now it's only in sheep. And this is at the very birth, no pun intended, of this technology. But we are reaching the point where we have the capability to to have a real artificial womb as opposed to excellent neonatal care.